Canadian Broadcasting Corporation presents the fourth of a five-part series based on Pierre Burton's book, Klondike. Prepared for radio by Bill Fraser. Produced and directed by Fred D.L. With original music composed and conducted by Tommy Banks. And starring the author himself as our host and guide. Writer, broadcaster, Pierre Burton.
Every society has its own status symbols. In Dawson City, in 1898, these symbols were unique. A box in a dance hall balcony. Champagne at $30 a pint. A set of matched husky dogs with silver harness. Or, in the case of Swiftwater Bill Gates, the only starched collar in town. While it was being laundered, Swiftwater took to his bed.
Klondike by Pierre Burton. Part 4, The Saga of Swiftwater Bill.
Hey, how's about a little drink, Sam?
What'll it be, Lonnie?
Give me the usual.
Coming right up.
Has Nigger Jim been in today?
Not yet.
I wonder where he's at.
The sky's the limit. Raise her up as far as you want to go, boys. And if it moves in your way, tear it off.
Ah, God. Isn't that Bill Gates betting at the far table?
Look, water, Bill Gates.
That's him. I know him. He used to be a dishwasher in Central City.
Well, he sure ain't no dishwasher now.
I can see that. Good Lord, look at the way he's dressed. Prince Albert coat, a top hat, diamond stick pin, starched collar.
The only starched collar in Dawson City.
Times change fast in this country these days.
Oh, Swiftwater's a big mining operator now. Part owner of the Monte Carlo Dance Hall and Saloon. He makes lots of money, and he spends lots, too. Why, I saw him and John Healy lose $5,000 between them on a stud poker game. They were only kibitzers.
Any man who owned a dance hall in Dawson in 1897 or in 1898 could be sure of status. He could also be fairly certain of profit. Far to the south, on the beaches of Skagway and Dyea, boat after boat was unloading its human cargo. And already a black line of men, most of them bent double under the weight of their packs, were struggling and groaning their way over the White Pass and the Chilkoot Pass. Dawson awaited them, if not with open arms, at least with outstretched palms.
Yep, it's sure hard to believe that's the same Bill Gates I used to know in Circle City. Hell, he was only a dishwasher.
Like I said, he sure ain't no dishwasher now. He hires others to mine his property. He lives it up here in town. Funny, you know, he doesn't drink either, but that's about all he doesn't do. Gambles. You can see. And sure as hell likes the ladies. Right now he's running with Gussie L'Amour.
Gussie L'Amour? She was in Circle City, too. She sure wouldn't look at Gates then.
Well, she looks at him now. Ever since he bought all those eggs.
What?
Oh, Gussie was going with a gambler. I guess Swiftwater was jealous. Anyway, he knew Gussie liked eggs. So he bought up every egg in town, which wasn't many at that time, because they were as scarce as hen's teeth in Dawson. Anyway, he gave them to Gussie, and I guess she thought it was something else, because she's been his woman ever since.
Eggs, of course, were a status symbol in Dawson. They sold for $2 a piece. Onions were so expensive they could only be bought at a drugstore. Gold of itself was not a status symbol. Big Alec McDonald, the king of the Klondike, used to give it away. Take it, he'd say. It's trash. It was what you did with the gold that gave you status. One man bought a dance hall girl for her weight in gold, and he got status that way. The kings of El Dorado Creek vied with each other to see who could give Cad Wilson, the dance hall queen, the finest nugget. She had them made into a fancy belt worth $50,000. The private box in a Dawson dance hall became a sort of symbol. Suspended above the turbulent and sweaty masses on the floor below, the miner, flush with gold, could feel that he had indeed risen in the world. And one single night, in the famous Monte Carlo Saloon, one such merrymaker had $1,700 worth of champagne brought to his box. Only by owning a dance hall or actually bathing in champagne could you achieve greater social éclat.
Swiftwater.
Yeah?
The new building for the Monte Carlo Dance Hall and Saloon will be started soon. We're going to need new furnishings, liquor and dance hall girls.
True. And we'll want the best of everything, as is befitting an establishment owned and operated by Swiftwater Bill Gates and Jack Smith.
Well, the only place we can get the best is in Frisco, and I don't like the idea of trusting somebody else to act as our agents.
Agents? Perish the thought. It should be one of us.
Well, I haven't a chance in hell of getting away, you know that. I have to operate the old place and supervise the construction of the new building.
Oh, think no more of it. After all, I have my mining properties bringing in revenue for me without any need of my presence. And I'm your partner. It's only fair that I take some of the burden from your shoulders. Of course, oh, Miss Gussie, but... Well, that's a sacrifice I'm willing to make for our business.
Well, I heard rumors that Gussie was going to Frisco herself.
Is that so? Well, it's all settled then.
Yes, I guess so. We'll need mirrors.
Mm-hmm.
I've been thinking of 10-foot ones. Velvet carpet, oil paintings of girls, well, you know the type.
Oh, yeah, yeah, leave it to me.
And real fancy gilt frames on the pictures.
Yes, yes.
Then we'll need fixtures, a year's supply of liquor, and a lineup of new girls, some that will really make the boys here sit up and take notice.
Well, I've always been known to have an eye for the finer things.
Yeah, so I've noticed. Well, I'll give you a list of the fixtures we'll need.
Go on, go.
And, Bill, mm-hmm. I figured it will all cost somewhere around $20,000. I'll put up half and you half.
Well, we're partners, aren't we? Any partner Swiftwater Bill Gates can expect him to share 50-50.
And, Bill, I'm depending on you.
Well, you aren't suggesting you don't trust me to carry it out, are you?
Oh, no. No, not at all, Bill.
Well, good. Then I'll start making plans to go.
While Swiftwater Bill was in San Francisco on his shopping spree, a human flood was pouring into Dawson by scow, barge, raft, steamboat, and anything else that would float. By the end of August 1898... 56 steamboats had dumped 7,400 tons of freight onto the new docks, everything from porcelain chamber pots to Napoleon brandy. Dawson was now the largest town north of Seattle and west of Winnipeg, transformed from a log community to a glittering northern capital. The Regina Hotel was planning to install Brussels carpets and woodwork trimmed with gold leaf. Its rival, the Fairview, would have steam-heated rooms, electric lights, Turkish baths, and an orchestra to play at the dinner hour. And the Monte Carlo had ordered 10-foot mirrors, velvet carpets, oil paintings, and $10,000 worth of additional fixtures.
Good Lord, Jack. You don't mean you sent Swiftwater down to Frisco on business?
Yeah, why?
Do you think that was smart?
What do you mean?
Well, you know Swiftwater, or you should. He'd rather play and spend money than bother with business. And Gussie L'Amour's down there. Went down just before him.
Yeah, I must admit, Gussie being down there bothers me a little.
A little? If it was my business... Well, it isn't, is it?
No, it ain't.
Sorry, Jack. Well, I'd better get along. Be seeing you.
Yeah. Goodbye, Bert. God, now he's got me worried.
The character and shape of Dawson was changing from day to day. Thousands of tents blossomed out on the hills and benches that overlooked the town and along the trails that led to the gold creeks. Sawmills screeched incessantly. Planks, timbers, sawhorses encumbered the thoroughfares. Mountains of logs and piles of freshly sawn lumber sprang up everywhere. Tents, cabins, and men shifted about constantly. The real bonanza was not in the creek that bears that name. It was in the city of gold, where everything was at a premium. A live kitten sold for an ounce of gold dust. A pack of 6 months old newspapers lugged across the mountains fetched $250. Almost anything that could be purchased in the outside world and brought into the gold camp would be worth a fortune.
Gussie!
Swiftwater
Bill, you old coot. Sure, it's good to see you. San Francisco's been a lonely place for me, just waiting till you get here.
Well, I'm here, my sweet, my sugar and spice. And San Francisco, look out. Swiftwater Bill Gates and Gussie Lemoore from Dawson City are going to show you how to live it up.
That's sure some fancy suits. Cost plenty, I'll bet.
Oh, what's money? Say, you still planning on marrying me like you promised, my little chickadee?
Oh, let's not talk about that right now, darling. Let's go out and spend some of that Klondike gold.
As you say, my dear. But we can get married and spend the gold.
Oh, Bill, you try to sweep me off my feet so fast. Don't rush me, dear.
The world that year was Klondike crazy. 1 million people, it was said, were determined to go to the Klondike, and 100,000 actually set out, using every crazy form of transportation devised by man, from bicycles to balloons. The movement was worldwide. A sloop load of Norwegians, a contingent of Maoris, a steam yacht loaded with titled Englishmen, all these headed for the north. Every train speeding across the continent had its special gold rush car, lined with jars of nuggets and photographs of the mining areas to attract business. Factories churned out desiccated foods 24 hours a day. And anyone emerging from the Klondike could expect a crowd of newspapermen and hangers-on trotting along at his heels.
Mr. Gates?
Just call me Swiftwater Bill, son.
Thank you, sir. People are also calling you the King of the Klondike.
A fitting title. By the way, son, just who in hell are you?
Oh, Abernathy, sir. Horace Abernathy of the Chronicle.
Ah, member of the Fourth Estate. Well, well, pleased to have you join me. Would you care for a drink, Abernathy? I'll order a bottle of champagne.
No, thank you, sir. You, appear to like champagne, Mr. Gates.
Swiftwater. Swiftwater Bill.
You appear to like champagne, Mr. Swiftwater. There's very good evidence that you ordered a good number of gallons for you and Miss Lemoore one night. That's a lot of champagne to drink in an evening, isn't it?
Yes, I imagine it would be. However, I wouldn't know. I never drink champagne or anything else.
Would it be too much to ask what you do with it, then, sir?
Well, son, have you ever tried bathing in champagne? Gives you the most wonderfully refreshing sensation. Makes you tingle all over. You try it sometime.
On the salary paid a reporter for the San Francisco Chronicle.
Miss Lemoore and I...
That's your wife, Gussie Lemoore.
No. Gussie and I are not married.
But I'd been given to understand, sir, you were married to Miss Lemoore a little over 3 weeks ago.
I was.
Beg your pardon, sir?
Married to Grace Lemoore. That's a sister of Gussie's.
But you did announce, sir, that you intended to marry Gussie.
Correct, son, correct. However, there was a small difficulty. Gussie already had a husband and child.
Oh, I see. Oh, well, then Miss Lemoore, with whom you had the champagne bath, was your wife, Grace Lemoore.
Heavens, no. Have no idea where Grace is. Had no idea where she was when Miss Lemoore and I had that bath.
Miss Lemoore? Sir?
Nellie. She's Gussie and Grace's youngest sister.
Swiftwater.
Yes, son?
I think I would appreciate that drink, but not champagne. Bourbon. Straight.
In Dawson, the champagne flowed like bathwater. In the saloon, stock companies staged Camille and Uncle Tom's Cabin. And newfangled devices, the projectoscope and the animatograph, flashed pictures that actually moved on bedsheet screens, while an enormous magic lantern projected advertising messages on the side of a frame building, and newsboys hawked the Klondike Nugget along the muddy streets, and the dancing Oakley sisters, Polly and Lottie, entertained thousands on a rough outdoor platform to the groans of a tiny organ. Jack Smith was starting to pace the riverbank, waiting for his boatload of furnishings for the Monte Carlo.
say, my dear?
I have an awful feeling
I'm just about out of funds.
Honey, that's impossible. You have a gold mine.
True. Unfortunately, the mine is in the Yukon, and I'm in San Francisco. I'm supposed to buy $20,000 worth of furnishings, liquor, and girlies for the Monte Carlo Dance Hall and Saloon.
Mm.
And, sweetheart, I just ain't got
$20,000. What?
I don't think I got $2,000 left.
Bastard. What am I going to do? How am I going to get back to Dawson?
Oh, come now, my sweet. I imagine you and your two sisters will find a way. $500 says you'll all be there before me. What bothers me is what Jack Smith is going to say if he doesn't get his furnishings and girls.
You'll find a way to get the girls. You usually do, you pint-sized little cheapskate.
Oh, now that's an unkind thing to call me, sweetheart. After the thousands of dollars I spent on you.
That was yesterday, honey. This is today. A girl's got to look after herself. Goodbye.
I think I still like Gussie the best of all three. Yes, sir, Dr. Wolf. There's a fortune to be made from the gold rush. And without risk. Without any risk at all.
Come now, Mr. Gates, that's a little hard to believe.
No, almost no risk at all. You see, everyone's thinking of the gold rush in terms of finding gold. Now, I've been lucky in that respect. But then, of course, I was in the country before the big strike. But you take it from me. There's a tremendous gamble in prospecting for gold.
I don't understand. You said...
Correct, sir. I said there was a fortune to be made from the gold rush without risk. You'll notice, Doctor, I said from...
I'm afraid I still don't understand.
Well, now look at it this way. Everyone is so interested in making their fortune from digging gold that the one sure field of profit is being largely overlooked, supplying the thousands of stampeders and miners and prospectors. Oh, there's lots of money in the Klondike. Make no mistake about that. And there's lots of people supplying entertainment. But... precious few are supplying real needs of the people. Why, do you realize, Doctor, that Dawson City itself is almost as large as either Seattle or Portland and wealthier than either? And yet, people have been close to starvation. Can't even get the basic necessities of life.
Yeah, I've heard stories.
Can't even get the basic necessities of life.
Can you get supplies in?
Well, thousands of men are going in. I've been in and out several times. Certainly we could get supplies in. Some are, but too few are trying. They're all too interested in getting the gold directly from the ground. And remember, Doctor, the greenhorns, chichacos we call them, the greenhorns going in by the thousands are taking millions of dollars in with them. Their inexperience means they frequently don't take enough or don't take the right things. But they only find that out when they get on the trail. And there is nobody there with the supplies they need.
You paint an exciting picture, Mr. Gates.
That's what I know and what I believe. That's why I'm in the process of setting up a trading and transportation company.
Trading and transportation company?
Yes, that's right. And with my experience in the North and my finances, it is, as I said, a sure moneymaker.
Something like that appeals to me. It really does.
Really?
Very much so, Swiftwater. Oh, can I call you that?
Oh, I wish you would.
Just call me Wilbert.
Fine, Wilbert. Wilbert, I'm waiting for deposits to come down from the Klondike. No, actually, that's why I'm holding off. Sufficient funds won't be in my bank until another 60 days. So now, if you would be interested...
In a partnership?
Yeah. Well, I didn't quite have that in mind. I was thinking more of a 90-day note for, say, $10,000 at 100% interest.
100% over 90 days? Now, you must be crazy.
Or pretty sure of myself.
I still want a partnership.
partnership. I hadn't really thought of that. Not really at all. All right, it's a deal. You give me a note for 90 days at 100% for $10,000, and you put $10,000 into the company, we'll have an equal partnership, you'll get your loan back, and the interest will pay you for your share of the partnership. In short, Wilbert, it will cost you nothing, and you'll share 50-50 in the profits of a sure moneymaker.
It's a real deal, partner.
The sky's the limit. Raise her up as far as you want to go, boys. And if the roof gets in your way, tear it off.
Well, with what a hell. Things have improved since I saw you last.
Nellie Lamour. And you're still in Crystal?
Obviously. And obviously you're loaded.
Yes, my little dumpling. You could say my fortunes have somewhat improved.
Meaning you found a sucker.
Yes, Sugar Plum, you could say that. A real 24-carat patsy.
Let's go to the town.
Swiftwater Bill, you got yourself a date.
Abernathy's my name, sir. Horace Abernathy of the San Francisco Chronicle. I believe you are Dr. Wolf.
That is correct, sir.
I also understand, Doctor, that you're a partner of Swiftwater Bill Gates in some business venture related to the Klondike Gold Rush.
I am.
Ah. Well, could I inquire, Doctor, what type of business it is?
Frankly, I'm beginning to wonder myself.
Swiftwater.
Yeah.
We're almost there. Good old Dawson City. Look at the crowd waiting on the dock.
Brass band and all.
Yes, Nellie, my little turtle dove. And I have a nice bevy of beauties and some of the finest whiskey ever distilled. Jack Smith should consider this a good start for our new Monte Carlo dance hall and saloon.
Weren't you supposed to get a few other things in Frisco?
Oh, a few baubles, but there wasn't time to do everything.
Well, we sure as hell did everything else. And every place, too. At least 10 times over.
Oh! Oh, dear.
Jack Smith doesn't sound too happy.
No, but I'll soon cheer him up, sweetie pie. Never fear.
Gates, you bloody scoundrel. Where's my $20,000?
Oh, Dr. Wolf, how did you get here?
I thought you were still in prison. I'm damn sure you did. Now, where's my money?
You've
got exactly 3 hours to pay me back the $20,000. And the hell with the interest.
I'll have it. Where's the stuff I sent you after? All I see is a few cases of whiskey and a boatload of girls. Where are the furnishings? And where's the velvet carpet and the painting?
No, just a minute, Jack. Surely you can understand how it is.
Oh, I understand, all right. You were living it up in Frisco, making the big shot of yourself on my money.
On whose money? He had $20,000 of mine.
And $10,000 of mine. And God alone knows how much of his own gold he took out of here.
Well...
All right, Gates, where is it? I want what you went after, or the money, or by God, I'll attach your mining profit at the bank and your share of the dance hall to boot.
Oh, now, have a heart, Jack. How am I going to pay off Wolf and you both at the same time and right now? That's impossible.
Why, you undernourished little runt. You're broke. And to think of the time I wasted with you in Frisco.
Wasted? Helping me spend my money?
Whose money?
Oh, well, a lot of it was mine.
Well, anyway, you miserable bastard, that was yesterday. This is today. And a girl's got to look out for herself. Goodbye.
A nice girl, actually, but I still think I prefer her sister, Gussie.
Get going and get my money, or I'll have the law here in 3 hours, starting now.
Oh, I'm going.
Anyway, it was a hell of a time I had. Just one hell of a time. By God, it'll be a long time before those people in San Francisco forget Swiftwater Bill Gates. I wonder if anyone ever took a bath in champagne there before. I doubt it. A real good time. And they'll remember me. The King of the Klondike.
they did remember him. In the Tivoli Theater, John Mulligan, he was the best known of the Klondike impresarios, produced his greatest hit. It was titled The Adventures of Stillwater Willie. With a fine sense of casting, he starred Nellie L'Amour in the leading role. And Swiftwater Bill himself would occupy the finest box in the theater and applaud this satire on his career. It didn't matter what the audience thought. He was being noticed. That was what counted. Nellie won a prize that year at a masquerade, dressed in a Prince Albert coat and silk hat with a placard in her back reading Stillwater Willie, the mayor of Lowestown. And Gussie was back in town, too. And from the stage of the Monte Carlo, she would sing directly to Swiftwater in his box. Swiftwater continued to add to his own legend. On his next trip to the outside world, he was hailed in the press as the Klondike Prince. He made headlines by offering to bet $7,000 in the turn of a single card with anyone who would challenge him. He attracted the attention of a wealthy widow, ran off with her 15-year-old daughter, arrived back from Dawson, presented his newest love with the only melon in town, it was worth $40, and then proceeded not only to soothe the irate mother who'd followed him to the Klondike, but to extract $50,000 from her, which he plunged into a harum-scarum mining venture. Bankrupt to the tune of $100,000, he decamped to Nome, ran off with his step-niece, recouped his fortunes in another Alaskan mine, was jailed for bigamy in Seattle, and proceeded to sue the lawyers, the sheriffs, the deputies, the judge, and all the reporters by presenting each and all of them with nuggets wrapped in $20 bills. But why go on? Swiftwater Bill's exploits became repetitious with the years. He died in 1935 in Peru. By then, Dawson City was a ghost town. The Monte Carlo was a fruit stand. I remember buying a banana there one June day when the first boat arrived. It was the first fresh fruit I'd seen since the previous September. And there were still quite a few old-timers in that town who remembered Swiftwater Bill Gates and his search for status.
The sky's the limit. Raise her up as far as you want to go, boys. And if the roof's in your way, tear it off.
Klondike, Part 4, with Pierre Burton. Prepared for radio by Bill Fraser. Original music composed and conducted by Tommy Banks. Douglas Master was heard as Bill Gates and Lynn Thornton as Nellie L'Amour, with Donald Truss, Bill Berry, Len Crowther, Neil Monroe, Michael Ball, Tim Christensen, Diane Hayden, Gordon Signer, Bob Cruz, Graham McPherson, and Dana Ivey. This program was made available to this station through the facilities of the Canadian Broadcasting Corporation.